Welcome to Very Amusing, your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and I'm a little hesitant to admit this, but I watched Labyrinth for the first time this weekend, and what a trip! I mean, on one hand, humiliating that it took me this long, but on another, I thankfully had a childhood completely unmarred by this film. I just didn't really see movies growing up. I think I mentioned it on here, but I still to this day don't really even know why. I mean, blame my mom. I'm just gonna blame her for it, who you will be hearing from in rare form at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. But I never saw Labyrinth. Never saw Labyrinth, and it finally happened for me, and oh my gosh. I texted one of my friends, well, a whole group chat of them, because Labyrinth somehow came up the day after I watched it. Okay, strange. And I confessed that I had not seen it. And they asked me what I thought. And I, honestly, my reaction is just because you can doesn't mean you should. Because I enjoyed it, but also, why? I'm going to be very, very choosy with my words because I know sometimes children are in the room, but why does David Bowie's Downstairs look like that? I mean, I know why, but like, what? Why didn't they just give him bigger pants? Anyway, it was good, but it was not by any means the highlight of my weekend, which was going Sunday afternoon to El Capitan Theater in Hollywood for official Disney food. I pre-ordered it during the week. I set up all of these alerts for El Capitan. You know, not for like work or business or anything like that, just to know when I could get a Mickey pretzel and hopefully not pay $12 in parking to get it. So I ordered a churro. I ordered a Mickey pretzel, salted. I very much appreciate that you could select salted or unsalted, with cheese sauce, we'll get into it in a second, and two 64-ounce tubs of popcorn. Now, if you're like, oh, how sweet, you got that for like a cute little movie night with your husband, like, you know, just a churro and a pretzel and two tubs of popcorn, you are gravely mistaken, because I ate almost one entire tub on the drive home. It's a 10-minute drive. And I ate the pretzel all alone in the kitchen to the point where Ben came in and was like, oh, hey, where's the pretzel? And I was like, it's inside my body now. I ate the entire thing. Now, the cheese sauce, I know I have a lot of thoughts about cheese. I don't like peel top cheese at the parks. But if this peel top cheese that they had at the El Cap was in the parks, I would have no problem. I would have zero issue because it was a little spicy. I had like a little something going on and I liked it much, much, much more than the cheese you get with the Mickey pretzels at like Magic Kingdom. Blah. This was fantastic. I really liked it. And weirdly, I mean, I'm not dieting as evidenced by all of the words that just came out of my mouth, but this cheese was very good. Better than like jarred salsa con queso, anything like that. And it was, I think, 100 calories? Which, in my brain, instead of being like, wow, that's not terrible for me, I go, okay, so if a daily average calorie is between like 2,000 and 2,500, can I eat 25 of these in a day and that would be socially appropriate? I need to eat a green. I think that's the moral of the story. I need to maybe eat a vegetable once in a while. But anyway, the experience was fantastic. It was so easy and organized. I just like walked in, I checked in, they were waiting for me. It felt very nice. They had merch for sale. They had this really cool Hocus Pocus shirt. It was kind of like a whisper of what Halloween season at Disneyland might have been, because the popcorn even came in these like adorable Disneyland buckets. Ugh, I can't think about it. It'll bum me out too much. But it was a delight, and also the people who worked there deemed me best dressed of the day, which was not a title I was expecting because I accidentally wore a mask that matched my house dress. I'm fully wearing a house dress. I'm still wearing it. This is the same day. This isn't like 4 days later. But they told me I was best dressed, and it was a compliment that I really needed, I think, because I don't leave the house very much. But I also ran into someone who said that they love the podcast? I believe your name was Nora. So if you're listening, Nora, thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet you. And I'm sorry I couldn't leave my sticker of social distancing that I was stuck on, like a little tiny plastic island. But it was wonderful to meet you. And I'm sorry I couldn't gab. And thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Moving on, because I will dwell on the fact that I ate two tubs of popcorn and I didn't buy a third in anticipation of wanting a third for too long. We are 1 week into our Patreon, and it has been very fun. This past week was spent rolling out the welcome wagon, and I cannot wait to share everything that comes next. So patrons, stay tuned for more shenanigans later this week. You won't want to miss it. A portion of all first week signups are going to be donated to Second Harvest Food Bank in Central Florida and Orange County to benefit theme park employees in need. And on top of that, the member-founded Facebook Foamily 5K and raffle is still going strong and creeping towards, oh my gosh, $20,000. There's so much happening and it's filling me with so much joy. You can still join the 5K and raffle, and I will give you all those details at the end of the episode. But just wanted to remind you up top that it all goes down this weekend. So stay tuned to Instagram and the Foamily Facebook group to follow along and hopefully, you know, briskly walk a 5K and win the raffle. That's everything that's happening on my end as I sit here anxiously awaiting being razzed on Twitter for not having watched Labyrinth as a child. I don't know what I was doing as a kid, you guys. I don't know. But stick around anyway, please. Let me redeem myself. We've got theme park news up next, and then we'll be, not to misfrizzle you, but surfing the waves of knowledge and learning all about how our favorite stuff at theme parks is actually made. Stick around. This one's a good one. All right. I have been typing this over and over all day today on social media for a story I'm trying to finish, but I just wanted to come on here and blast it out in case you haven't heard yet. The state of California today released their guidelines for reopening theme parks, and it's a doozy. Essentially, what you need to know is that the reopening is going to be determined by what the COVID case rate is county by county. So it's not statewide. That means two things. It means that these parks may have a while before they open, and that the parks will probably and maybe open at different times. Now, to give you an update, this is as of Tuesday, and the tiers are purple is the highest one. It goes purple, red, orange, yellow. Yellow being that you basically have COVID under control. You are getting one or less cases per 100,000 people in your county. Currently, Orange County, which is home to Disneyland Resort and Knott's Berry Farm, is red. That is the second highest tier of the four. Los Angeles County, Universal, is purple, which is the highest ranked tier. So both towns have a bit of a way to go. It's going to be possibly a long process. It's really hard to tell because my work doesn't usually leave me to cover statewide public health dealings, but essentially both of them have to get to yellow to be able to reopen. When the parks do reopen, they will be obligated to follow a lot of the same things that have been happening in Florida. Masks will be required at all times unless you are eating or drinking. These parks will be limited to 25% capacity. But one of the more interesting details that I want to share is that queues will need to be performed in an outdoor setting only. That language comes directly from the state. I was a little confused about this, but my friends Brooke and Valerie were able to confirm it. That means that most likely you may not be seeing some pre-shows. You will not be standing inside ride buildings. And that will greatly change what the park experience is like because you could be visiting a park like Universal or a park like Disneyland completely differently if it is entirely virtual queues or leaning heavily on something like a return time or a fast pass system. So we'll find out more TBD ! So yeah, that came out yesterday. Disneyland Resort released a statement. Ken Potrock, the president of Disneyland Resort, said that, I won't paraphrase, I'll read directly. We have proven that we can responsibly reopen with science-backed health and safety protocols strictly enforced at our theme park properties around the world. So stay tuned. I don't know what happens next, but hopefully as these counties do move towards yellow, theme parks aside, it means that our communities are safer and healthier and people are handling the virus in a more responsible way and things are more under control. So that is something I believe we can all root for. Stay tuned. I will post any other updates on my social media throughout the week. Otherwise, let's get into the episode. Okay, you know that feeling that everyone knows something that you don't? For me, that used to be Quince, but no more. Quince is a truly astounding retailer, essentially carrying everything a person on your mood board would wear. We're talking washable silk blouses, chic leather bags, 14-karat gold jewelry, European linen dresses, and the best part of all is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They're up here with $50 Mongolian cashmere sweaters. $50! Beautiful, timeless items you can wear and actually live in. Meaning, you don't have to be scared to bring them on your theme park travels. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you're sensitive to retailers like I am, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But it's not just your everyday work-life clothes. They have everything. I recently joined a new gym, big deal for me, and desperately needed new workout clothes to wear there. It's kind of like an LA gym. Like, it kind of got to look cute. So I ordered a pair of their Ultraform bike shorts and high-rise pocket leggings. And when I tell you, the quality of these leggings is truly on par with brands I paid three times as much for, which really kind of makes me love these three times more. I'm not only going to buy them again, but actually buy the other travel stuff in my cart because they have things like beautiful pastel suitcases for $129 and these wildly affordable compression packing cubes that I have been waiting forever to buy compression packing cubes, and they're always so pricey. And here, the price fits. So if you want to get ready for work, your new gym, travel, anything in your life, go to Quince. Quince.com/amusing will get you free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Ooh, that's nice for someone who puts stuff off like I do. That's Quince.com/amusing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/amusing.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to the first half of our two-part exploration of how things work and how they're made. If you know anything about me, you know I am very easily wowed. But this two-part series is all about me taking you on a journey through things I myself don't really know much about. In this episode, we'll cover a stunt show that completely blew me away when I first saw it, and the secret details of walk-around characters that will surprise, delight, and hopefully wow you too. We're focusing on the cross-section of design and tech, proficiency in engineering and creativity and masterful handiwork and immersive forward-thinking projects, all of which are not typically the nuts and bolts of what I report on. So I'm going to take a bit of a sidecar on this one and let the experts lead the way. Unlike some other episodes, these will mostly be full interviews with the folks who create these boundary-pushing experiences or just study them day in and day out. Stunt shows, ride tech, audio animatronics, projection mapping, experiential design. I've covered it all and definitely no more than the average person who sadly gets stuck with me at a cocktail party and I talk their ear off. But I just wanted to dig a little deeper just for you, theme park fans, my fellow friends, and bring you things I'm personally curious about from the point of view of those who know it firsthand. In this episode, we're going to learn about theme park character development. And first off, understand what it takes to create a boundary-bending staged stunt show. When the Bourne Stuntacular opened this past summer in Universal Studios, Florida, it was unlike what many theme park guests had experienced before. It's not that Universal doesn't excel at bringing movie-style stunts to a theme park audience. Just look at the longevity of Waterworld at Universal Studios Hollywood, which is on its 25th year. The difference here is that the Bourne Stuntacular is as cutting-edge as a theme park stage show gets. With a mix of digital video and green screen, set pieces, stunts, acting, and high-flying moves, it's hard to believe they even pulled it off in the first place. The show opened over the summer, so naturally, many of you might not have seen it yet. But trust me when I say, it's unlike anything else I have ever seen within a theme park in my entire career. The Stuntacular starts with the character playing Jason Bourne in a street fight with another performer. It's around then that the mind games kick in. A crowd, cheering them on, mixes practical actors and digital ones projected on the show's 3,600 square foot LED screen. This huge thing has 5,000 panels on it, stretching 28 feet tall and 130 feet wide, using over 19 million pixels to create realistic imagery that acts as another layer of storytelling on stage. Throughout the show, you find yourself somewhat bewildered by it. You know it's a screen, you know you're not in Tangier, but it looks so real. And at certain times specifically, it seamlessly blends together, confusing your eye into believing you've been transported somewhere else. The true testament of impeccable theme park design. The Bourne Stuntacular takes its audience on a helicopter flight above Dubai, a high-stakes motorcycle chase, and even a rooftop shootout and balcony face-off, all while pulling off some feats on stage and screen that, frankly, I cannot believe no one in any meeting went, "That's just too hard, let's not do it." Even the set pieces move automatically, like trackless ride vehicles, gliding on and off stage. This one really aimed for the moon and kind of landed on the moon, not among the stars. It's not every day that an experience like this actually comes to fruition, so I had to get someone on the phone to tell me how they pulled this thing off. Thankfully, Deborah Beinack, Vice President of Entertainment at Universal Orlando Resort, was just the person to discuss this unbelievably ambitious experience with me. Now, if you haven't seen the show, don't worry. This is still going to be a really, really interesting chat. Deborah got pretty candid about the challenges involved in making a stunt show of this caliber a reality, while also discussing how difficult some of these stunts really are, even telling us about the time that the Stuntacular looked so good on stage, it tricked some of her coworkers. Hi, thank you so much for joining me. I am so excited to talk to you about the Bourne Stuntacular. I was able to see it when I was in Florida, I guess a couple months ago at this point, and I loved it. I loved it so much.
I'm so excited about that.
I didn't really know what to expect because you guys were keeping it a real tight secret. Like, there was no video. I didn't really know what was going to happen except for that preview you did. And I was very wide-eyed and childlike the entire time.
That is exactly the kind of thing we want to hear. That is awesome. We did keep it on the down low for a little while. We wanted it to be a surprise when people saw it, meet some maybe underestimated expectations. So I'm so glad you loved it.
Oh my gosh, I loved it. I hope it's all right that I'm going to ask you so many questions about it, because my main takeaway was just not understanding how it worked, because there are so many overlapping technologies and effects that kind of fool your brain into thinking you're seeing something in real life when it's really just a staged production. And I'm dying to know how it works. But I should start from the beginning and ask you, how was this show formulated?
Well, when we started, we were really looking to do something that a whole group could do together. We wanted an attraction in the park that you didn't have to separate from your family, your friends. If you were afraid of heights or you had a height restriction, we wanted everybody to be able to stay together and spend some time together. And this would be a 20-minute out of the heat and humidity and weather and get to hang out. So we started with that. But with that in mind, we still have this expectation that is Universal Orlando, that everything is thrilling and very immersive and fun. So we had to combine all those things, but yet still have the whole family stay together. So we thought a stunt show inside could do that. And that's sort of where we started from. And then it grew from there.
And did the idea of the show or the tech that you were able to put into it come first?
It's, you know, that's the good chicken and egg question that is always, even looking back on it, we're like, where did we start? It was really just these conversations of, we want to do this story, but we have this reputation of this high-tech quality immersive environments that Universal does. So we have to combine all those things and sort of have them run parallel and make sure we're doing both at the same time. So the story, I guess, drives everything. That's where we started. But then we are like, but this could be really cool because we could do this show, but we want it to be in different locations. We want to move around. We don't want to stay in one place. So what if we had this really cool screen that could take us to different locations? We could move around the world. We could go to Dubai. We could go to back to Washington. We could go to Tangier. We could do all these things. But we didn't want it to just be a screen show either. We wanted it to be immersive and come to life and have the actors. So what you said earlier, it really is layers. It's layers of the screen. And then if we have these moving buildings in front of that, and how do we match them perfectly to the screen and then have live actors on that, bringing that to life. And then at the end, we threw in, let's do some projection mapping too. So from the,
why not?
The audience. Yeah, why not? Let's just keep throwing stuff in there. Where's a kitchen sink? I'm sure we can find one, throw that in there. So just keep throwing stuff on there. And that's sort of where it started. Let's put all this stuff together.
It's so interesting to me because the whole show itself feels very blue sky. It feels like what you started with, and then the final product isn't too far from that. It doesn't seem like things were budget engineered or really cut out, because you are taken to so many locations and there are so many different types of stunts. So was this show created with stunt people in mind? Were they part of the process, or did everything just magically come together?
No, it absolutely, we started with, we wanted it to be a stunt show. We wanted a live performer show, and we were trying to think, we'd done a lot of musical things lately, and we wanted that action and thrill and an edge of your seat. So stunts was really a big part of that. And it's, stunt shows are sort of at the core of Universal theme park history. We've always had a stunt show in the parks, and we wanted to get back to that and make sure we kept that alive. So they were always a big part of it, and they, that human connection, having those live performers in the theater with you and with the audience, was really important to us. And they bring that excitement and connection and energy to the show.
And what was their reaction when you started finalizing the show and casting people? Because I have to assume that, like me, they were not expecting what this final product was.
Carly, they all thought we were nuts. Everybody thought that we were completely out of our minds. When we started this and we thought, okay, here's the different teams that we're going to need to bring together. We're going to need somebody to build the digital media. We're going to need somebody to put together this show action equipment on the stage. We're going to need these live performers. When we put them all in a room and said, okay, so here's our idea. Here's what we're going to do. The looks on their faces was like, you are all completely mad. You have lost your mind. But hey, I mean, we'll go with you. This sounds fun and exciting. So everybody got on board together really quickly and said, let's just do it. Let's do it. And you're right. It isn't too far at all from the concept drawings. When we start putting stuff in ink and looking at what we want to do, we still start with that process of a deck with just pictures. And when I always, at the end of a project, hang the original artwork in my office of what we started with, and it looks pretty much exactly like what you can go see in the theater right now. So it turned out pretty cool, pretty accurate to what we thought.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was the whole, and everybody that we got involved were just the perfect partners, from Cinesite, who was building the digital media, and Action Horizons, our stunt people, and Tate. They do these amazing concert show equipment, and they all were just so on board with us, and our partners here at Universal Creative and Universal Pictures and the Ludlum Estate. Everybody just bonded so well and got along so well. It made it easy and fun. And yeah, there were challenges and hard times where we all looked at each other and weren't quite sure what we were doing, but we stuck together and it turned out all right.
And what was the most challenging part of this show? Is there any one stunt in particular that you thought might not make it in, but after a while you kind of finally figured it out?
So, you know, high falls are always that danger aspect that you know, that's the point, though. You want people to cringe and gasp, and so you do. And there's a reason that everybody cringes and gasps, because it's scary and it's dangerous. So, but our partners at Action Horizons, there's this premier stunt company. They're in all kinds of blockbuster movies. That's what they do. They know how to do this. And we've worked with them before in all of our parks around the world. So they gave us a really good confidence and comfort level. They're like, we can do this. You guys can do this. Don't be nervous. Don't be scared. We would never do anything that is not safe, and we'll take care of you guys and our people. And so, yeah, there were moments that we were like, that's going to be scary, but we did it right. And we did it with the right people, and they gave us this confidence that it's okay. It's all good.
And the choreography of the show has to be so tight to make sure that every cue is met. Was that difficult in getting the show off the ground, just to make sure that every single scene worked? Because some of those transitions are very close.
Yeah, so when you talk about what the biggest challenge of the show is, you just hit it. Everything having to be matched up so closely, and we were doing it all over North America. So the digital media was being built in Canada, and the stunt performers were a little bit in California, where Action Horizon is based, and then they moved here to Orlando. The show action equipment was being built in Pennsylvania, and all this is going on simultaneously. But like you said, it all has to match. It all has to be seamless, and it all has to have these transitions. And so getting everybody on the same page, from something as simple as the color and paint on the buildings have to match perfectly to the digital media, and then they all have to move at the exact same time, and the performers have to be able to jump to them at the same time, but they're training on equipment that we're literally dragging across a soundstage with ropes. I mean, it was crazy to get all that to match up. So yeah, the challenges you're talking about, you know, you're right on. That's what the challenges were. But you know, we got there. Once we got everybody to Orlando and synced everybody up, it started to roll pretty good.
I'm sitting here like, this is just too hard. You should have just thrown in the towel.
Believe me, I had the towel in my hand at points, but the team never let me quite throw it. They were awesome. It was really everybody picking each other up when somebody was like, I don't know. And then somebody else would come in and go, yeah, you know, yeah, we're going to do this thing. Come on, we'll figure it out. And everybody did. Everybody did. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. I'd like to talk about my favorite part, which you alluded to a moment ago, which is how the real life set pieces match the environment. How did you pull that off, particularly in the marketplace scene, when my eyes were falling out of my head because I was like, I know I'm in a theme park, but still my brain thinks there's more here.
Yeah, it was amazing. The folks that did the digital video for us, they did a combination of going out and actually filming things. So they went to these places and filmed rooftops, and then they combined that with green screen, where they filmed performers on a green screen, and then they put in digital over that. So all of that combined to make that all look so real. If they hadn't gone and filmed it, and we were just doing it digitally, it wouldn't have worked, we don't think. It had to be a combination of all of those things. And then our folks that were building the buildings and the sets for the rooftops, they had to find a way to match paints. And we had some challenges of, okay, we're painting this in Pennsylvania, but then we're going to get here and the lighting in the theater is going to be different once we have it on the big screen. And now we're changing lighting. Do we need to repaint things? Can we repaint things? Is that going to damage something? Can the stunt performers jump on this paint without slipping off? It's all of that that had to really come together. And it took time. It took time for us to, and we built in that time. So that we could look at it, put new lights on it, repaint it, jump on it, see if we slipped on it. So it took a lot, but they did a great job with it.
How long start to finish did this show take to create?
A little over 3 years. So
wow.
Yeah, a little over 3 years. We started again with some drawings on a paper of this is sort of what we thought. We called Universal Pictures, and we had this interest in Bourne and thought it would be a great fit. So we got them on board. And then we went to, once we got all of our partners together, we went to California and rented a warehouse and built everything like a mock setup. We put up just a screen, a front projection screen. It wasn't an LED or anything. We put up a screen, built some cardboard, some sets and things like that, and dragged them around to see if we could move in time with something we had filmed, and we just wanted to make sure it could work. We did a proof of concept out there, and once we all sort of thought this could be a thing, then we went from there. So yeah, that was our first steps in the process, and then once we took our executives out there and showed them, see, we can do this. We can match this moving stuff to the screen and performers. We can combine all this stuff. They gave us the green light, and then we were off to the races.
Wow, it's such a big, ambitious idea, and to see it come to life and actually come together so well is, it's just mind-melding. I would love to know more about the screen, because the screen is clearly a star of the show, but I don't know why it's so impressive.
That's what we all said, and we at first thought, we just need a background. The screen is a background. It's going to take us from place to place. That's what we need it for. And then it just became more as we kept talking about it and going, let's go film things. Let's do the digital on top of that. It became its own star. And we didn't expect that either. But it certainly makes the immersive part of the show. So it's 28 feet tall. It's 130 feet wide. There's over 5,000 panels on it. And get this, 19 million pixels all over that screen. And that's what makes the image so real and makes us go, is that an actual clothesline or is that a set? Is that a can sitting there? Is that guy real? A cool story. When we only had the screen in, we didn't have anything else on the stage yet. We were running the media over and over, and at one point we were pulling a building or two in or out, and our executives came to just check in on us, as they do, just make sure that we're not over there goofing around, but they showed up to make sure we were making some progress. And so they said, you know, set our expectations, what are we going to see? And I said, we're going to run some film. We'll bring a building on so you can see how the building, and it was the Dubai apartment building, if you remember that scene, that was coming on. And I said, you'll see that pull in and you'll see the transition, and then you'll see some other things. We don't have any performers right now. It's their first week here, so they won't be on the stage, but we'll go from there. So we start up the film. They're all watching it. It's great. We even have the lights on in the theater, so it's not even set perfectly, but they're looking at it. And then there's the scene where one of the bad guys swoops in on a helicopter and he's chasing Bourne, and the Dubai building is there. And so the executive standing next to me looks at me and said, I thought you didn't have performers here today. And I said, yeah, we don't. We don't. That's a filmed performer. That's the film. And they were blown away. They for sure thought that we had somebody in the theater dangling from a line. And I was like, no, nope. And I think that was the first time that I thought, this is going to work. This is going to work. This screen is going to be a star, and this is going to work.
Oh my gosh. Because I have to assume 3 years is a longer frame of time for creating a show.
Yeah, for show it is. That is, we're usually, entertainment's usually the quick and nimble group on property. When we need something new, fun, and fast, they throw it at us and we can get something into the park pretty quickly. But they gave us some time on this and knew it would be more than just a show. They knew it would be a full-blown attraction for our guests and give them a destination to go to in the park. And so they gave us some time, which was awesome.
And do you have a personal favorite part of the show? I don't even want to, it feels weird to call it a show. I feel like I have to say attraction. Do you have a personal favorite part of the attraction?
Yeah, I like the slow motion minute. That's cool to me, where everything goes
too.
Into slow motion. I was skeptical about that. I was one of the people going, I don't know, maybe we just go back to regular speed. And they're like, just give us a second and we'll show you. And it's now one of my favorite parts. And I love the audience reaction to that. Although we get a great gasp on the falls and the stunts, when it goes into slow motion, I think it's to the point where people are like, what are they doing? They're now doing this? What are they doing? What's next? So there's an audible reaction to that moment, which I enjoy standing in the back and watching.
Wow. This has been incredible. I asked every question I had, but is there anything else about the show I should know that we may not have touched on?
Our relationship with Universal Pictures, especially Frank Marshall, was just amazing to us in this. He was the producer on the films, and usually our relationship in that manner is just a quick approval. They're checking things off for us in a box, and he just dove in and got involved with us and was this amazing mentor and supportive and showed up down here. And when we were in rough times and not having the most fun, he came in and would tell us a great story about something he went through and how to get through it and what to do. So his participation was just really cool. And I just want to make sure I throw out some credit to him and how supportive he was in getting us through this process.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for telling me some more behind the scenes stuff about this show that I am personally obsessed with. I cannot wait to see it again. And thank you so much for creating it.
Yeah, no, thank you for letting me hang out with you a bit. You have this amazing positive energy that we've all been listening to on your podcast, and we all need that right now. So thanks for letting me be a part of that and hanging out with you for a bit. It was awesome. Next time you come, let me know. We'll go check out the show together.
Oh, I would love to. I went like alone and just sat in the corner and was like, this is the best.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a good way to experience it. And next time come and I'll show you some secrets while we're hanging out.
Some secrets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You heard it. She's going to show me some secrets. It's wild, right? She also touched on another of my favorite way things are made, by testing something out in an abandoned warehouse. It's something we never ever see, but always hear about randomly years down the road. And it delights me that these empty cavernous spaces can become home to such magic. If you're curious for more, Universal put out their own behind-the-scenes video of how it's done, and it's really cool to see the actors go in these little elevators to the bottom of the stage. They look like those tubes at the bank where you shove things through and they magically disappear. It's cool! I also wanted to add that, according to Orlando Business Journal, there's even a hidden T2 3D Easter egg somewhere in the back of the theater to pay homage to the show that previously occupied that space. So, if you're attending, ask a team member to point it out so you can see it.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
There are certain parts of the theme park experience that, personally, I find more fascinating than other ones. We're always talking about ride vehicles and roller coaster airtime and trackless this or that, but I'm often most curious about the things we don't focus on, like characters. At Disney parks, I love to meet Goofy for his personality, Sully from Monsters, Inc. just for his size, and Kevin at Animal Kingdom, which... makes for a transcendent experience. But Universal has one of my all-time favorite in-park characters, Guy Diamond from the Trolls films. To me, this shining silver disco ball of a guy makes for an extraordinary meet-and-greet experience, because when you meet a regular character, you're never usually waiting for some grand finale like you are with this one, because Guy Diamond farts glitter. Yes. Yes, you heard that right. He farts real glitter. Now, seeing any on-screen character in real life is a wonderful experience, but knowing there's a chance, either during your moment with him or another guest's, that something special is going to happen has elevated the entire character meet landscape, in my opinion. Now, parents, there is some discussion of character meet and greets ahead, and since this is a How Things Work episode, please keep that in mind going forward. Nothing is too egregious, but we do heavily acknowledge kind of how the magic is made, so I just want you to know that up top. Bringing films and stories to life by way of finally seeing something on screen come to life in person for the very first time is what theme and amusement parks are all about, and Ryan Rhodes of Custom Characters Incorporated is responsible for many of those moments. The reason I wanted to speak with Ryan wasn't to find out anything salacious, like some outlets kind of like to do when talking about theme park characters. I truly wanted to celebrate how real and lifelike these costume characters he creates are, and to honor someone who isn't really ever publicly given the acknowledgement he deserves. Ryan is absolutely fascinating, but we also spoke very freely about a lot of things, and I wanted to honor his candor without giving too much away, so I bleeped more things than I usually do. That beloved Star Wars chime is often used to cover profanity, but here, it's just to protect from whatever NDA I am concerned he may have signed and ruined by saying a few specific words out loud. But essentially, this dude does it all and is exceptional at everything he puts his mind to. And I'm so pleased that he allowed me to call him up and talk directly with the character master to let theme park fans in on how these magical experiences are really made. I know, it's generally looked down upon to share the way things work at theme parks, since keeping things magical for guests is extremely important. But I truly believe, after this conversation, anyone who already liked this character will walk away with a renewed appreciation for it. And anyone who hasn't yet met Guy Diamond, or never wanted to, will immediately want to. I think you're really going to enjoy this segment. So here's Ryan telling me how he got his start and how he gets things done.
Basically, we started the company in 1985 in a garage.
Wow.
And it grew really quickly because we were discovered by people I can talk about. Our first big projects were Sectars for Coleco and Cabbage Patch Kids for Coleco, which we made hundreds of.
Hundreds of full-size characters?
Yeah.
Hundreds?
So, hundreds. Right now we're doing, we're doing hundreds of right now, and we'll probably made 800 or 900 for all the parks all around the world. It's a big operation. We make so many costumes your head would spin.
Oh my gosh, you're really like, you're the character god.
Well, I work like, I'm 70 and I'm still working a 65 to 70 hour week, so.
Oh my gosh.
Which is okay, I like it. But anyway, what we do is if you go to the park and you see a bunch of big characters wandering around, that's what we make. So most of our major clients have been Disney, Universal, DreamWorks, and Nickelodeon, and a lot of others. What to tell you, it's the process is very, most people would never guess how much really goes into these costumes. I'll say, I'll tell them what we do. Oh, so you sew? It's like, no, that's not it. Some people at the business sew, yeah. But no, everything is sculpted in foam. All the heads I sculpt in foam, and then they're cast in plaster, and then they're turned into fiberglass, and then they're pulled in plastic, and then there's a ton of art and craft work into finishing them, like the trolls. That was, it's interesting that you're interested in Guy Diamond, because that was really tricky. First, the trolls, you've got like 3 feet of hair that has to stand straight up. And, gravity is kind of like, So you get that going, and everything was going well. We'd made, hundreds of trolls, and then they bring in Guy Diamond, who not only is covered in glitter, but farts it, and they want that. So I don't know if you're aware that the Guy Diamond's actually fart glitter.
Oh, I'm well aware, and that is exactly why I wanted to talk to you.
Oh.
Because that to me seems like such ingenuity to be able to do that. And I was so curious about how you even innovate and invent something like that.
Well, that was a really tricky one. And we had to get, there's a lot of trial and error. And the problem is the glitter tends to pack down and doesn't want to get blown out. you can't give them X-lax or anything. So basically, in the end, in order to get the glitter to work, they had to start jumping up and down a little just before they did it. and that kind of loosened the glitter, and then it would blow out.
And is that just something that you found through trial and error of the character being in the park?
Yeah, just through trial and error. We didn't know what to do, you know? I mean, because, you know, we're trying it as many times as we can here to make sure it works. And we found just, you know, oh, just time to jump up and down three times. It's kind of cute when they do that.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I guess they're still all using him that way. And then it was difficult because the first ones, we really didn't know what to do. And all we could do is glue glitter all over the costume. And they got really stiff and hard. And everywhere you go, the glitter's falling off. And then finally, this brilliant assistant I had at the time thought to have some silver sequin fabric sublimated into the right color, and it worked. It was just night and day. All of a sudden, it was beautiful. It held up. It didn't fall off. So,
is it a normal process to redo costumes like you did with Guy Diamond?
No, rarely that happens because most costumes go through a real approval process, and that's it. They just stay what they are for the most part forever. Because, you know, after all these years, you know what works, what doesn't. All of the artistic directors from the company buy off on everything each step of the way. So by the time it goes out the door, you're documenting it. You know just exactly how to make it again. And from then on, you just keep making them exactly the same. With Guy Diamond, I mean, even, you know, there were, in the beginning, there was just no idea of how on earth to do it besides with glitter on and see what happens. And if they worked, people were happy. It still was a lot of fun and the kids loved it. But for the other thing for us is when we build, it isn't just about making it look cute. You've got to deal with safety, performer comfort. You've got to deal with weight. You've got to deal with ventilation. You've got to deal with longevity because the parks don't want something that they want it to last for a few years, maybe with some refurb. But it's got to last.
That process you mentioned of creating a character from start to finish, how long does that typically take?
But the actual process is usually about 8 to 10 weeks, sometimes 16 or 20, depending on what it is.
Wow.
Like a simpler costume. Hour-wise, it's not that bad, but there's a lot to do with getting approvals, begging clients for reference, getting all the right colors. Some more complicated costumes, like we did a cyborg costume.
Oh.
And that thing is just, you know, it was so labor intensive. That was more like 6 to 8 months. But that's rare.
How much does making one of these characters cost?
Ooh, I don't like to say that. It's a big, yeah, I never give out prices.
But it's expensive, I would assume.
They're very expensive.
Yeah. I want to make sure people know that this isn't some low-quality costume factory.
No, I don't know what I want to say. Usually we're kind of like very, you know, it's always in the thousands. It's often in the tens of thousands. And some of the costumes, like a cyborg or something, can be way up there.
Cool. I love that you have such a wide span of different things you can make.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about this business is it's always something different. You never know what kind of odd thing is going to, you know, come through the door that they want you to make.
I do want to go back to Guy Diamond for a minute.
Yeah.
I'd love to know more about, I can't believe this is a real sentence, how Guy farts glitter.
There's a big tube filled with glitter and a button they push. So it's got an air canister in it. So when you push a button, it blows a shot of air through a little place where the glitter from the tube is dropped down into. So if it gets packed in there too tightly, you kind of got to jiggle it. But so I just imagine a tube filled with glitter, and there's a little place at the end that the glitter can drop into. And on one side of that, there's a hose hooked up to a canister. So when the person inside pushes a button, it shoots air through that, and then it blows the glitter out. I think that's one of the biggest hits ever of any costume going out for a debut. People were just falling all over themselves, and there were videos all over the internet.
We went on to discuss how he created this massive, beyond life-size creation of Mr. Link from the film Missing Link, a stunning Leica movie that you should absolutely watch if you have not. And I know, coming from me, that means nothing, all things considered. But still, it is absolutely exceptional, and the character they created from it, you won't believe your eyes when you see a photo of it. Ryan and I went on to discuss something I cannot include in here, but essentially, we just talked about what it's like to bring someone else's artistic vision to life and how rewarding that process can be. I mean, how does that feel to take someone's idea and make it something 3D in real life that they can hug?
Oh, well, I love it. I love when I see people are happy. And a lot of times I get to, what's most exciting for me is when I get to do the design in myself. Because I designed the parade that's in. That was probably one of the highlights of my life, and some other things I've gotten to design and execute. It's so much. I wish you were here. You'd be in shock, all the things we've done. I'll tell you, one of the biggest ever was, you know that movie, How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah.
And we did Toothless the Dragon. He's like 18 feet long. And some big old guy has to get in there, you know, on all fours. Not on all fours. He's got crutches under his front arms. He's going to bend over. And that thing was just the biggest hit everywhere it went. It really was sweet and beautiful. And I have all these images of it. Stole the show at the Cannes Film Festival that year.
Wow.
And all the photographers were going for that. And I have these big pictures of Cate Blanchett, you know, being with it and loving it. And so we're lucky. We get a lot of really great feedback that, you know, a lot of people don't get in their jobs probably. So it's great. I mean, it's great. I'm going on and on and on. Why don't you stop me?
No, because I love hearing. This is so fascinating. It's like, it's truly like talking to a creator genius, like someone that I never thought I could speak to on the phone who has made so many things that so many people love.
Oh, it's all just, you never know what you're going to get. You just got to make your materials obey you, even if they don't want to do what you want them to do. And you got to nail it. And it is really challenging, but at the end, you really get this. You get something, and you see people just loving it.
You must make hundreds of these a year, I assume.
Oh, yeah, hundreds and hundreds.
How big is your
crew of about 50 people.
Wow.
It averages between 40 to 50, somewhere in there usually. Most of them have been with us for a long time. A lot of them, 20, 30 years. So we have this incredible crew, really knows everything inside and out, really great to work with. That makes it great. You know, you're not, I don't know. It's just like, it's just something that's been built up and built up and built up. The teamwork is amazing. So that's why we can produce that many. Because right now we're under the gun like crazy, which is weird when most of the world has no work and is staying home. And we're building a whole new park for.
Oh, wow. So you're doing all the characters.
A giant parade and all the characters to populate that park. Because when we develop a character, it's not just for one person. Like if you develop a character for, it goes to parks all the way around the world. The whole world's building parks constantly because people are just so addicted to, well, they're nearly as addicted to these characters as they are to their phones.
So, I mean, so as someone interviewing you for a theme park project, I get it. Yeah.
So we'll get orders from all over the world. We're making stuff all the time for Japan, for China, for Singapore, for Europe, for you name it. They just go out all the time internationally. I mean, like we did the whole new park in Dubai.
And when you mentioned that you were doing, I think you said 900. Like when someone orders.
Well, that's about probably how many we've made over the years. Right now we're doing a few more hundred.
When someone orders a character, how many of that character do you typically provide them?
There's so many different. I mean, there's like, I don't know, 10 or 12 different ones. So they'll order 5 of this and 10 of that, and then they want different outfits for them.
Your workspace must look like a, like a dry cleaners for giants.
Oh, yeah, it's very hard. We really, really have to manage the space well. We have two giant buildings, but it would be impossible to move. It'd be nice to have more space, but we just keep editing. And, you know, every few years you just throw out molds and patterns of anything you think won't be used. And but we have thousands of documented costumes that somebody could order any time. Right now, most of our, like for this year, we're not even accepting work until for next spring.
Wow! In this economy?
I know. It feels weird. I don't say it to too many people, but we're very, very lucky.
Is there anything else about what you do that you think someone who isn't familiar with this craft would be perhaps interested or fascinated by?
One weird thing about this business is, you know, almost everything we do, we just figured it out and made it up. You don't learn this. You might learn some arts and crafts here and there in your life, but nobody teaches this in school seriously. Theater departments touch on it, but it's really a unique, unique business.
Okay, so I just found out that Disney discontinued the blueberry croissant bread pudding at Epcot. And Carly, this is kind of like your caramel corn at Carmel. I don't even want to pronounce it because I'll pronounce it wrong. Anyways, the blueberry bread pudding is gone and I am in distress. Goodbye.
Considered 747 churros to be a helpline, but given that voicemail, it made me think that maybe we need a support group for those who have lost their favorite theme park snacks, because I've been there and I am maybe an empath, I suppose. I feel your pain. That is a horrible feeling when your favorite theme park snack just disappears. You have no control over it. You don't know why. Maybe it'll reappear at a festival for much more money and a smaller portion. You just don't know. And I have been there. They have gotten rid of my favorite things before. I can't even talk about it. It was a food at DCA. I'm very sad. Still a trauma moment in my life. But I get it. I get it. And I think we need to find an organized way to be there for each other. So for next week, if anyone wants to call in and just publicly mourn a favorite food that they've gotten rid of at the parks, I will gather them together and we can all share in this community of sometimes joy, sometimes sadness. And RIP your bread pudding. I am so genuinely sorry. Hi, it's me again. I have taken a beat and I have decided that if I don't tell you about the food that I'm still mourning, I'm going to hear about it all week long and it's going to become a thing and I didn't intend to cause drama. So I will just tell you, even though I have been in severe denial for so long, I can't even look at this place anymore because it upsets me so much. I loved the rice bowl at Lucky Fortune Cookery at Disney California Adventure. I'm truly like dealing with this in real time. Oh my gosh. It was my favorite meal when I'd go there. My friend Katrina introduced me to it, and it is, if you hack your way around it, it is a dream. I would do brown rice, tofu, double vegetables, and then get two sauces on the side with it so you can mix and match. One of them would always be that like coconut curry, and I think there was another, maybe a teriyaki sauce. Oh, it was the best. It was the best. And then it was gone. And I gotta tell you, I did not take it well, and I continue to not take it well. I have not eaten there since. When I walk by it, I put blinders up. I put my hand up so I don't have to look at it. So trust me when I say I get you about this bread pudding. Okay, now I need to go forget this memory of my favorite meal that once was. Okay, bye, next call.
My name's Sam from Dallas, Texas. I have spent a ton of time I grew up in California, so I went to Disneyland a ton. So I know a lot about Disneyland, but I've only been to Disney World twice, and both were really short trips, unfortunately. And I would love to know what your top three or maybe even top five favorite hotels are, because I'm just lost. All of them seem awesome. So I would love to hear what you have to say about the hotels. So I really hope you picked that question. I love your podcast. It's helped me just continue the Disney magic throughout these crazy times. I really, really just want to thank you so much. So thanks. Bye.
What a wonderful call. Thank you so much. So I kind of dug through the other episodes we've done, and I could have sworn I've answered this question on an earlier episode, but I couldn't find it, which I'm sure somebody in their car is screaming at their screen being like, you've answered this, but I don't have memory of it. So guess what? We're going to answer it again. Now, for those who haven't spent a large portion of their life inside of a Disney World hotel room, like some of us have, there are three different pricing tiers. You have a value resort on the bottom, which is a little more no thrills. It's kind of set up motel style, where there's a lot of rooms in different buildings and you walk between the buildings. At Disney, they typically have these big decorations, like larger than life, could be a horror movie if they came to life type of decor themed to, you know, like all-star sports, all-star movies, things like that. Then you have moderates, which the theming there completely varies. So I always recommend to go for the vibe that you most enjoy. My personal favorite of the bunch is Coronado Springs, specifically Grandestino Tower. I think that that makes that a moderate plus. It's a little nicer. You have this really, really new build as part of the resort. It's just, it's nice. And now that it has the lore of NBA players having stayed there, it just feels a little more special. Like, if LeBron James can stay in Grandestino and not be like, this hotel's bad, then it means it's good. Like, he stays in the fanciest hotels in the world, I bet. So it just co-signs my belief that Grandestino Tower is my favorite Disney hotel. It's just really good. It's really good. And then you have the deluxes. And each one pulls at people's heartstrings a little. They have their personal favorites. I vibe most with the Grand Floridian. I love walking into that hotel. It feels so special. And there's a lot of things there that I can easily critique, like that the Grand Floridian Orchestra is no longer there. It's a sore spot with me. I'm very upset about it. But the Grand Floridian is just always going to be majestic. Now, I also have become a big supporter of hotels that are not operated by Disney. I think depending on what type of trip you're going on, it can be a really good option, especially if you're driving, which is something that I am newly obsessed with doing. I've always been like a park transportation person, taking Ubers, taking Lyfts, but lately, in the past year and a half, I really like having a car. I really like being able to go off campus, one might say. I like going to Wawa to get a seltzer and bring it into the park. It's very thrilling for me. I just like having access to do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it. Now, all of this is different in a pandemic life. Of course, there's no park hopping. You can only really go to one park a day. So even if you stay at Beach and Yacht Club, it's not like you can go for a nightcap and then walk back to your hotel. Like, you are married to one park each day. But I still love Swan and Dolphin because of their proximity to Hollywood Studios and Epcot. I think the Swan and Dolphin rooms are really great. The bathroom setup is fantastic. I also love their coffee shop, Fuel. I've definitely talked about Fuel on here before. I really stand Swan and Dolphin. Even though I don't love the exterior of the building, I do not like Michael Graves' architecture. That's who designed it. But otherwise, Swan and Dolphin is fully one of my top recommendations all the time. And I just have to shout it out because I don't know how big you're going, but Four Seasons Orlando is sometimes cheaper than the Grand Floridian. So if you're truly looking to relax, you just want to go to the park maybe 2 to 3 days, you also want to sit by the pool, things like that, that's kind of the spot. It's really, really good. And then there's so many places. I've also stayed at this place, the Grove Resort and Water Park Orlando, which was apartment style setups. And the really neat thing was that if you're driving, you can pull your car up to your floor. The parking garage is kind of inside the building. So you just pull up to, say, floor 9, And then you just get out and then you just go in your room and it's easy peasy. I really, really loved my stay there. So there's so many options. I hope I didn't make this worse, but I do recommend if you're kind of overwhelmed by Disney's own hotels and trying to discern the difference between them, because on that website, you just see like 8 square photos and they all seem kind of like locked in time. There's no real people there. Like you just can't really get a feel for it. Check out YouTube videos of room walkthroughs and especially just of what the lobbies are like, what the grounds are like. And I think it'll really help you get a good vibe and be able to choose between different hotels at the exact same price point and figure out which works best for you. I hope that was helpful. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Carly, this is Blair from Oklahoma. I'm sorry if this completely alienates the rest of your audience, but I was super excited to find out that you also agree that Mission Impossible is the greatest film franchise of all time. So I was curious if you could rank the movies from your favorite to least favorite, and also if you could just list up some of your favorite moments from the movies. I think for me, my favorite to least favorite would be 6, 5, 4, 1, 3, 2. Love the podcast. Thanks for doing what you do, Carly.
Okay, yes. I have gotten dozens and dozens and dozens of fantastic Disney calls in the past couple weeks, but a lot of them require a little more work. And honestly, I am down to the wire on getting this episode out. I have to lock it about 48-ish hours before it goes out, and I am very late every week. So we're just gonna take this softball and run with it and hope that's cool. Also, I will answer those questions. I just will get an earlier head start on it for next week's episode. Now, I have answered this question once before on my friend Drew Taylor's podcast, Light the Fuse, which is a Mission Impossible specific podcast. Please don't turn this off. I promise I will be quick, okay? If you kind of vaguely remember his name, he provided that theme music for our mini mysteries a few weeks back. And on his podcast, whenever they have a guest on at the end, you rank the movies. And they did not like my rankings. I was really, really sweating it. Like, I remember driving over to record it being like, oh my God, Drew's not going to like this. This is going to be really nerve-wracking. And they did not like it because the description of me on episode 63, which is the one I was on, is Carly tells us about this and this and that. And she gives us her hair rankings and movie rankings. Both are controversial. Ranking Tom Cruise's hair and also the MI films. I am even nervous talking about this now, but it's way too inside baseball for this crowd. I'm just going to go with it. And here is what I said on their podcast.
So yeah. 6, 4, 3, 5.
Okay.
2, 1.
Whoa. All right. Well, it's been great. Let's talk.
Drew's left.
If you want to listen to 20 full minutes of Drew and Charles, who host that podcast, giving me a hard time, listen to my episode of Light the Fuse. But I stand behind it. Mission Impossible Fallout is the greatest film ever made, ever, period. I think it is perfect. I have seen it more times than I can possibly fathom. I watch it whenever I travel, which RIP traveling, I guess. But I used to watch it on every plane ride, whenever I was in a hotel, just constantly. I know every beat of that film. And the caller asked for me to pull out my favorite moments. But I think every moment when Vanessa Kirby gives that look, you know, like she has like her look, and then the part where Tom Cruise is like, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it. Like, oh my God, the dial, it's just perfect. It's just perfect. This is not Light the Fuse, a competitive podcast to them, but I am obsessed. I also don't like the first one, which is a controversial take, but I'm not here for this like low-level calm drama or Tom Cruise's young face. Give me death-defying stunts. Give me incredible women as sidekicks. Also, Mission Impossible 4 is such a tight ensemble cast. Oh my God. Paula Patton, are you kidding me? She is perfect in that film. And that green dress, it's too much. I need to focus on Disney stuff. But anyway, while I do think parts of MI5 are fantastic, anything with Ilsa is just perfection. For me, it's just, it's Fallout and it's MI4 and the upstairs downstairs hotel room scene, and Benji has so much to do in that, and Mission Impossible 3 really grew on me because the stakes feel so real. Solomon Lane is like a bit too soft for my liking, but I really prefer a villain who has more edge. Like Philip Seymour Hoffman had edge. Also, the mask gags, amazing. I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it, but see it if you haven't seen it, because it's my favorite movie. But the mask gag in Mission Impossible Fallout, get out of here. So yes, feel free to drag me if you are a Mission Impossible fan for my ranking, but you know what? That's where I stand, and I stand behind it.
We'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And that's our show! Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Deborah Beinack from Universal Orlando Resort and Ryan Rhodes of Custom Characters Incorporated. Thank you to everyone who called in on the 747 Churros hotline. Please keep those calls coming. Remember, if I didn't use yours before, it doesn't necessarily mean I won't use it in the future, so stay tuned. In fact, a lot of voicemails are so good lately that I have to carve out time this week to do additional research so that I can respond to them. So get amped. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, listen, we'd happily take a 5-star rating. We wouldn't want to shy away from that. So maybe while you're there, just subscribe so you get new episodes the moment they drop, and maybe even leave a review, perhaps. I want to shout out Yogi Sim? Millie, different person than Yogi Sim. Horse of Bear, Holly158, Sheena Marie B, Elizabeth E, T Paris, Dizmom, and everyone else who recently left a review. It's so appreciated. And you have the added gift that you drown out the rankings from people who give me 1 star based on who I'm voting for. Real cool, guy. Real cool. No thanks for that review. But because I am a journalist, I also need to acknowledge a very important review left by Alexandra BD, who happens to be my best friend. Alex wrote, "Carly, I've been to Epcot with you, and we definitely went to Canada first. Love the show! Friends, do your dishes, okay? Because I left Alex with dirty bowls and plates for a full school year in college. And frankly, she has a pass to drag me about anything and everything she wants going forward. I have no ground to stand on. She did all of my dishes. But why does she remember which way we turned? My bachelorette party was 5.5 years ago, and she remembers going to Canada first? Which, in my defense, I will say it was my first visit as an adult. I didn't know any better, and we had a dinner reservation in Mexico, so it made sense at the time to drink the opposite way. But I want to just provide a formal acknowledgement and apology to whomever I said was doing Disney wrong for going Canada first. I mean, I believe it still, but I have disparaged you, and now that I know I come from the same roots as you, I need to be a bit kinder. So now that I know the way, I hope to spread that knowledge with you and never be razzed again by my best friend on my podcast. So thank all of you, well, most of you, Alex included, not that other dude, for keeping these reviews fun and for making fun of me publicly, because as I said before, I can't edit them. So if you want to make a joke at my expense, it's going to live there forever. Thank you as well to everyone who signed up for my new Patreon this week. You can find our online VIP party at patreon.com/CarlyWeisel. It's $5 a month, which, as I tell them, cheaper than Club 33, right? And there's a whole bunch of fun stuff. So everything about Very Amusing here is going to remain the same. But if you're like, no, this is the end of the podcast and I need more theme park nonsense to get me through the rest of the day, then it might be for you. And I hope you enjoy everything going on over there. I also want to shout out the Fomaly 5K fundraiser and raffle, which is going down this weekend, Friday, October 23rd through the 25th. Thank you again to Melinda Welch, who I cannot pronounce her name correctly. Anytime, I always email her and I'm like, well, I emailed her once. I guess that's an exaggeration. But I emailed her and said, how do I pronounce your name? She said, Welch, like the fruit juice. And then I realized, I don't know if it's pronounced Welch or Welch. Welch. So either way, Melinda, you're great. Meredith Miller, Kelly Schumer, Lauren Ballou, and everyone else who has signed up and is ready to run or walk or shimmy their way across the virtual 5K finish line. Also, if you're interested, buy your raffle tickets as soon as possible because we're closing up shop in a few days and you don't want to miss out on these prizes. All the links are in the show notes and on my social media, and proceeds, every single dollar of them, will go to help cast members in need through Cast Member Pantry and Second Harvest Food Bank. Follow me on social media at Carly Wiesel on Instagram and Twitter to follow along with the fun all weekend long. Very Amusing is edited sweetly by Jeff Fox. Check back this time next week for part two of this series, when we'll be diving into a lot more technical stuff. You won't want to miss it. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon. Hi, Mom.
Hi, honey. I'm here. Yay.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. I'm here.
I don't. Are you shocked that it's like leaving a voicemail, but you're here in real life?
I might still leave a voicemail afterwards to tell you how I think it went.
That's not nice.
No, it'll be great.
I don't love that.
I'm very happy to be here, so it'll be great.
Oh my goodness. Well, I don't. What do you want to talk about?
When the next time I'll see you, because I'm leaving you tomorrow and I'm very sad about it.
That is not podcast related content. So,
okay, I'm sitting in this room and it feels like I'm in Wonderland. I have never seen more whimsical things in my whole life. I'm surrounded.
Yeah, some people come into my office and are like, this is bad. And then other people are like, ooh, things to look at.
This is the greatest.
I mean, yeah, it's filled with toys. Also, I will add for anyone who's not in the room, which is everyone, there is a oil painting or something of my mom as a child. Mm-hmm. Like a chalk. What is that? Chalk?
That is an oil painting. And that was when I was 3 years old. And I want you to know it has its own wall. Yes. It's about a 16 by 20. And then I'm in back of you with me, you, and Mickey. I'm very excited to be
here.
Well,
yeah, because whenever you come to my house, you're always like, where am I? And you always seek out where your placement is.
Well, of course.
So now that I have this shrine to you on the wall, I don't have to worry about it anymore.
I just want
to
know when I leave tomorrow, what goes up on that wall?
A picture of Morty. I know that future plans have been canceled, sadly, but is there anything that was your favorite of all of the trips we've taken? Context for people who aren't blood related to me and birthed me. My mom is usually with me whenever I'm at Disney World, either in the shadows or waiting in the hotel room for me to finish work. She's always there. She's a fixture in the background. Sometimes she appears on touring plans. Sometimes she just is online. Sometimes she attacks strangers and asks them where they got their Darth Vader purse, even though she doesn't know who Darth Vader is. She's always there. So what has been your favorite Disney visit?
It's really hard because I was going with you so often and every time is better than the last, and I love it so much. I've done cruises. I've done Magic Kingdom.
You have done cruises.
I sure did. Going down the river, the Rhine River, that was fabulous. Going to Germany.
Yeah, that was fun.
Fabulous.
It was, we went on a Adventures by Disney river cruise during, when people say, like, when hell freezes over, that's what it felt like. It was so cold. Every photo of me is me wearing, like, every single thing I packed and my mom's clothes.
You look like the Michelin Man. We put you in your pants and then my winter pants and then an extra coat that I brought. And then you put your red coat over. You looked like 700 pounds. It was a riot.
It was very fun, but I was very, very, very cold.
I also love, because I know that I would never have gone to Paris if it wasn't for you, and you took me to Paris Disney, and that was...
Yeah, do you want to...
The greatest.
I don't know if I've told that story here, but do you want to tell people about your 60th birthday trip to Paris?
Okay, so I was turning 60, Carly thought, and she said, for your 60th, I know you wanted to go to Paris. You've been to a lot of places, but never to Paris. But Dad is never going to take you. He's just, like, not romantic, not into it. And you said,
well, I didn't say that part.
No, I said that part.
Yeah.
So then you said, okay, for your 60th, I'm taking you to Paris. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. This was like right after a cruise we took together. And we went right from the cruise to Paris. And we're landing and just landing in Paris. And all of a sudden, I look at you and I said, Carly, I have something to tell you. You're going to be so pissed at me. And you're like, what? What? Everything's great. I said, Carly, I'm turning 59. And you said, I'm glad you said that. You will never get another gift for your 60th birthday when it comes. And then for my 60th, you went to Vegas. So you forgot.
Oh, is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're just milking it for everything it's worth.
I'm milking it. I'm having the best time of my life.
I mean, the strategy of telling me once there was a point of no return.
We were landed. I'm getting my luggage.
What did you think I was going to do? Be like, you're turning 59, so the trip is canceled?
No, you would have been like, if you would have told me that, we wouldn't have gone this year. That's what you would have said.
Yeah, that does sound
so
like
I
me.
Was going right yeah, from our last like trip, flying right to Paris, just kind of warm that in.
Oh, my God.
It was so good.
Did we go to Disneyland Paris first, or was that...
We went there first.
Okay.
And then we went...
Then we did everything else.
Yeah.
Did you? I don't remember if you liked it or not.
I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, the first night we went and had the big salad
oh,
at that
right,
place.
Oh, right, we stayed there.
Right.
Yes. Yes, the big salad.
The big salad
and
was so
I believe
good.
It's Annette's, where Ooh. It's like a... It's a 50s-ish diner. It's like if a French person saw Johnny Rockets and was like, oh, we can do that, and then put one waitress on roller skates. That's the restaurant. And they had a big salad by name.
The big salad. It was so good.
Yeah,
then we
great.
Went to that candy store.
Oh, it's, yes, that's
oh
right.
God, you can get as much as you want.
Yeah. The
fresh.
I don't know the name of it. It's the gift shop in the... Ratatouille attraction area. So the ride that we're getting at Epcot called Remy's Ratatouille Adventure, it's the original version. It's called like Le something. It's in French. What is a Remy ride? You know what I'm talking about. And the gift shop has pick and mix. It has like fill up a bag of candy, which if you've been to Disneyland Paris, you know, it like becomes a food group because there's not much food.
It was so good.
Within the parks. But yeah.
You know what I liked a lot, which is crazy to say? They had the best pins out of anywhere
yes.
in the entire world.
Yes, accurate. They did.
Oh, my God.
I got the best, like, fancy ones.
Yeah.
Like, fancy, fancy, real ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some that they wore that they didn't want and they put in the mix. I got great pins.
Yeah, I forgot about that. We really, we got a bounty.
Yeah, it was fun. I think we did, like, two full days?
2 days, yeah.
Yeah, and then we went to Paris and went shopping a little bit. That was fun.
Yeah,
it was so great. It was so great. Oh, the best trips.
I forgot how you get with pins.
I get like a 4-year-old get out of my way.
Yeah, you're aggressive.
I am aggressive, but I get them. How about when we were at the Contemporary and it was about 10 to 11 and we had to catch the boat back to our hotel at 11 and we saw a pin at one of the stores and they were closing in 8 minutes and there was no other pin that I wanted to buy, so I went to the store across the way, bought a pin that was inexpensive to trade for the pin that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. We made the boat.
We did. I remember we waited 45 minutes for the boat, but we did make the last boat.
Yes, we did.
The pin in question was Gonzo wearing a Mickey Mouse hat, like Mickey Mouse ears, but Gonzo, like Gonzo is a Mouseketeer, which I thought was very cute. And I also was like, I don't need it. And you're like, you're going to want this. And I was like, I don't want it. I don't have any pins. And now it's my favorite one, of course.
Of course. I don't know what you fight me, but
well,
you
you're right,
loving
like
it.
70% of the time. And then 30% of the time, it's just like, what were you thinking?
Well, I get a few misses, but I do my best. I just buy you a lot of stuff that I like. And once in a while, you like a few of them.
But I don't need this stuff.
Oh, they're so cute. You'll love it. See? You'll love it. I love when you say, I can't take it. My mom was right. These are like golden words to my ears.
I hate this so much.
I love
this is why I like regaling you to the voicemail. You just leave your audio and then that's it. And then if I'm like, I don't like it, then I get full editorial control. But now I have to answer up to everything.
Well, I don't make takes. I leave you a message because if I call your cell phone, you say, don't leave me a message. I'm not going to listen to it.
Well, I'm not going to listen to it because every message is, hi, it's mom. Call me back. And it's like, oh, I got the missed call.
But when I leave a message on 747 churros,
yeah, I have to listen.
You always like pay attention. I love it.
I have to listen.
I'm just going to call you all the time on that number.
Yeah, well, people love your calls.
I love that. I love your audience. I love my foamers. I love it. I love them.
Oh my
love
God.
Them. I'm so happy. I'm on everything. I talk to your friends. This is great. You gave me life.
Oh my God.
I gave you life. You gave me back life.
Yeah, it's like unleashing a tiger, like opening the cage and just letting them out.
I'm so bored all the time. This is so wonderful. It gives me an outlet and I can do things. And, yeah. So when is our next trip?
Once the pandemic is over.
I do want to go to Tokyo with you.
Well, we hopefully would have gone in 2021, which is not... probably not going to happen for us. I have a plane ticket with my husband, and you're not invited.
When?
You're not invited. When? We're supposed to go in May. But
we're not going in. If you're going in May, I'm going with.
No, you're not. You can't invite yourself on trips with my husband.
You're my daughter. Of course
I can. That's not how that works.
I'll stay in my room.
No.
Yeah. I want to go to all the little shops with you.
That's not the same trip I do with Ben. With Ben, he's like, you get a day. And I'm like, not going to happen. And then I get 2 days and I am running around the park doing stuff. And I know.
I love to run around the park because I do like 10 miles a day on my little heart monitor thing.
Yeah. Okay. So heads up to everyone listening. My mom keeps a pace at Epcot World Showcase that is unsustainable for me. She is just zipping around in laps. And I'm like, I can't walk this fast, woman. It's so hot out.
And I can't walk slow. So I usually meet you somewhere. I have to walk fast. It's
everyone's always like, how do you do it? Even though I don't think I have park stamina anymore.
Oh, yes,
because
you do.
No, because it's going to be like, you know, I'm not going as often. I don't have it.
But you work out. You walk every day.
But park stamina is different.
No, if you put popcorn at the end of a couple of miles, it's not a problem.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe I'll keep it up because I'll be like, oh my God, my snacks.
Destinations.
But I haven't walked that much in so long.
You walk a lot with me.
But not Disney walking.
Disney's the best walking. Best exercise.
I know. You're always like a country ahead. And you're like, bye, I'll catch up with you. I can't do it.
But I don't like real fast rides. So you'll go on a fast ride and then I'll meet you at the ride after and I will scour all the gift shops in the area.
Yes, that is accurate.
This is so much fun. If you need me to come in next month for another session,
this
is it. This is a one-shot deal.
Yes.
Okay, let me just say, if the ratings are really good and they want me back, would you have me back? I love you guys so much.
Usually I say, like, where can people follow you? But all your stuff is locked down. You're private on the internet, except that you follow anybody I post and then comment on every photo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And on Facebook, I'm under Audrey Weisel, but I'll take everybody. But for Instagram, I'm only just for you and your friends, so I can kind of see what's going on.
So you can embed yourself in our lives.
Yeah. I'm here to stay, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like you watch my stories to see where I am.
I watch everything.
Yeah, I know.
I read everything. I listen to every podcast. Go quiz your dad. See what he knows.
Oh my God.
I love you all and thank you for listening.
You don't have to yell.
Oh, I don't have to. Oh, I don't have to. Thank you all so much. I was so excited to be here. And if you give a good review that you'd like to see me again, I can come back. I love you.
And if you don't, then she won't.
How about this? I'll see you real soon.
Hey!
Oh, that's your line.
That's my thing.
What's Mickey's thing? Hey. Yep.
Okay, bye.